South Carolina's got everything. Natural beauty, trendy cities, but you might miss your next big adventure in a smaller town. We've got you covered on the Palmetto Porch, Discover South Carolina's official podcast. I'm Devin Whitmire. Come with me as I venture off the beaten path and learn about these towns from the locals who know them best. Check out the Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information, head on over to scpalmettoporch.com.
This show is for general educational purposes only and is not a substitute for specific legal advice by a competent lawyer practicing in your jurisdiction.
Long Island's 1100 WHLI at your service presents Divorce and Happily Ever After. Listen as Elisa Geffner and Carolyn Kirsch discuss personal growth, relationships, divorce, and family on Long Island's 1100 WHLI. Now, your hosts, Elisa and Carolyn.
Good morning, New York. I'm Elisa Geffner.
And I'm Carolyn Kirsch. We're partners in a matrimonial and family law firm, and we handle matters under that umbrella of matrimonial and family law, everything that you could think of. We have been working together for 17 amazing years, and we've had the opportunity to help so many people.
I mean, I don't know how, you know, it's a marriage, definitely. There's ups and there's downs.
Are there downs? I don't think there's many downs.
Well, I refer to her as my wife and vice versa. So welcome to Divorce and Happily Ever After, where we are providing you with our own insight on family relationships and how divorces can create an opportunity for personal growth and moving to your next chapter.
Today, we will be speaking with Neil Katz, managing partner of Katz Schwat, a prominent law firm handling estate planning matters, tax controversy and planning, corporate sales and acquisitions, and business planning and transactions. He is a renowned lecturer and former professor at Hofstra University. He is also happily married with two dynamic daughters, ages 18 and 17.
And he will be discussing how you navigate having two teenagers who had to live through COVID. Now, in celebrity news, the hot topic right now is that we hear that Bill and Melinda Gates are now divorcing. So what do you think about that?
You know, so we were speaking to someone this morning who said, you know, how shocked she was that they were getting divorced after being married for so long. And we kind of said we weren't so shocked because, as you may have heard in our first episode, over time, you know, you have children. And as your children get older, as theirs are, I believe their youngest is 18, and they're moving on with their own lives, you know, you had this whole family, you had this whole dynamic, you were together, you were busy, soccer fields, all of this. And then once the kids start moving on to their getting jobs, going to college, you're left looking at one another. And sometimes you don't even know who that person is across the table because you've grown apart, you've been so busy, and you didn't take the time to connect.
And also, as you sort of grow, sometimes it's on two different paths, right? So you've accumulated, especially in their position, so much wealth, so much notoriety, so much going on. And maybe one person wants to continue moving a little faster than the other. One might want to sort of take a step back and enjoy their wealth and what they've amassed. And maybe the other party just wants to continue moving in that direction. We find that that happens a lot at that those ages. Again, it, you know, a lot of times it's moving into next decades and being in certain decades where your priorities change. I know that Melinda is 53 and Bill is 63, and they're certainly looking at life in a different perspective than maybe somebody who's 30 or 40 is, and who they want to sort of proverbial go into the sunset with.
Interestingly, they didn't have a prenuptial agreement, but they did have what's called, I guess they call it a separation agreement, but in New York we might call a postnuptial agreement, which is basically a contract that you enter into when you're still married and move on. So if that was put in place, one would think, you know, they must have had some thought that maybe things weren't perfect.
They definitely had to have gotten their finances in line. And I think people probably do that more when they know that they're heading for divorce. So this was probably not very recent news in their world, because it's usually uncommon that in a marriage that, it, you know, you're not thinking about terminating it. You're not really approaching your spouse and saying, hey, honey, I want to be with you forever, but can you sign this document dealing with how our assets will be distributed if we terminate our marriage? It would be a weird conversation.
It would. And again, just touching on how someone being married so long, how can you imagine they're really getting divorced? I'll never forget when I was practicing early on, there was this one couple and I had a four-way conference with them, with, you know, settlement conference with the wife's attorney, and I had the husband in that case, and they're sitting next to each other, and my client has his arm around his wife and he's kissing her on her head and she's leaning on his shoulder, and I'm looking at the two of them and I'm like, you're getting divorced just, you two look like the happiest couple after 25 years. I can't understand for the life of me why now you're getting divorced. And obviously, I had this conversation with him after we were done. And you know what he said to me? He said, Carolyn, he said, I love my wife. She was an amazing mother. We had a great family, but she nagged me to death. He said, and I just cannot live the rest of my life being nagged to death. He said, I love her. He said, I just couldn't take it anymore. And I found a simple woman, and she loves everything I do for her, and she doesn't ask me to take out the garbage more than once, and it's a match made in heaven. So
there's that joke where the wife asks the husband to put the garbage bag in the garbage and he puts it in wrong, and she comes and she looks at him and she says, you can't do this right. You can't even put a garbage bag in a garbage. What's wrong with you? You're never doing this again. And the husband smirks and walks away.
I think my ex-husband had that strategy with me. I was like, oh, fine, I'll do it myself.
So, but, you know, it's a good segue for us to talk about an interesting topic. It's funny when we talk about seasons that there are really divorce seasons, prenup seasons, and right now we're in a prenup season.
Because most couples get married in the spring, the summer, and the fall, and especially with COVID, you know, so many couples that had these weddings had to put their weddings on hold. They couldn't have it in the venue they wanted.
And it's like Marissa Tomei, their clock is ticking. Right,
like
ladies?
This.
Right, brides?
We have plans. And we do know a couple of people that had a big weddings planned. They wound up just, you know, eloping and doing a civil wedding and having a very intimate ceremony because they did want to move on and plan their family. But even when things started opening up, it wasn't to the extent that you could have this big, lavish wedding in the way that you wanted. And now that we're at this New York State 150, you know, person guest list, limit, people are rushing to the altar and they're finally ready. So
it's going to be interesting to see dancing in COVID. I think they're coming up with random rules on that. I don't even know how.
I heard that everyone's going to have handheld plexiglass partitions around. I'm just kidding.
We carry them around in our business because, you know, with the husbands and wives, I think that that's what they like. We should do that in the marital bed. We can create like a plexiglass partition that we sell that when you're going through a divorce and you need to sleep in the same bed, which we're going to get to. Actually, we have funny stories about that, you know, we'll talk about in a little while.
I think more people need those Sleep Number beds where you really have two separate mattresses or whatever they are, and then you're really not even connected, you know. Think about that if you're in pre-divorce planning mode.
go mattress shopping. That seems a little bit, what's the word? But anyway.
Extreme?
No. The reverse. You're not going mattress shopping when you're going through a divorce. But
hey. Well, if you're not ready and your spouse wants a new mattress, what are you going to do?
What about like those minivans where you separate the seats, like with the siblings? You know, they had those old commercials where they separate the siblings fighting. You could have like those mattresses that just separate to two sides of the room.
That just roll away.
But anyway, so we always, you know, an important question to decide is a prenup right for you? Is a prenup something that you should be looking to get? And I think it's important if that's an idea or something that should happen, and we'll tell you a couple reasons why, that this sort of is an early on discussion that you have with your fiance and what it looks like and starting getting involved in that and doing it, because once you get to the tail end of your preparation, you really want to focus just on that other stuff, not the legal stuff, the more fun stuff. So the sooner the better.
Because it could certainly put a damper on your wedding when the last thing you're doing is going to your attorneys to sign your prenuptial agreement. And believe you me, it happens. We get phone calls all the time. I'm getting married in 2 weeks, and it's awkward. And I find that a lot of times, you know, couples don't talk about it enough, about what they're going to do and how, you know, how they're going to handle their prenuptial agreement. And it's difficult.
So people in like second marriages, it's somewhat of an important thing because you might have children from and if you have children from a prior marriage, there, you know, marriage invokes certain rights, estate rights and things like that, that your spouse is entitled to. So if you want to protect your children from your first marriage and let what you leave in your will control, it's a conversation that you might have to preserve those assets.
And if you're a business owner, if you have a business, a partnership interest, anything of that nature, you're going to want a prenuptial agreement because a business or an interest in a business or a partnership, it's an asset that will be valued in a divorce and it will be distributed, not necessarily 50-50. There's a different formula for that, which we could talk about in our later episodes. But the last thing you want to do in a divorce is have your business valued. It's expensive, it's time consuming, and nobody wants to pay anybody out for a business that they're not a title owner in. So that's very important for a prenuptial agreement.
And also, you know, there's people, a lot of people who have family-run businesses, children who are expecting large inheritances or getting involved in their family business, and they have their parent who has acquired and amassed certain wealth that they want to protect and keep outside of the marriage. These agreements are heavily negotiated. They're not simple. It's forecasting a divorce. It's not an easy thing to do, but sometimes necessary. You know, one thing I compare it to is an insurance policy. You get homeowners insurance. It doesn't mean you want your house to burn down. Of course not. But if it does, you have certain things in place and protections. And also at that point in time, you might also have a life with somebody where you don't want to get into discord and argument and contest a litigation for years on end. So it gives certainty.
And I have a lot of clients, you know, maybe I handled their first divorce or something of that nature. And then they move on, they get married and they don't get a prenuptial agreement. And then they're back. And I'm like, you're kidding me. You know, I think that's what I told you when you left. Make sure if you get remarried, you need a prenuptial agreement. You can't go through this again.
But we also have people who have about 2 or 3 or 4 prenuptial agreements with us, right? They keep getting married. So
those are the annuities. And at some point we say it's time to stop.
Now we're going to switch gears. We're really excited to have our guest, Neil Katz. Before we start, you know what Carolyn had said about that you're a lecturer and you're very into education and educating people. So I have to give a special thank you for my father. You're a groupie, right? So
Absolutely.
He gets so excited being in that audience. And I think 1 or 2 times you've given him a shout out and subtly, and he knew it was for him and he was probably beaming. So I just have to put that out there. It's really sweet.
I can't wait to be able to get back in front of audiences and be able to talk. I'm getting a little tired of talking to people from one end of a computer and just letting them be sitting somewhere and just listening to me without me being able to see them. So hopefully in the near future, we'll get him back into an audience. We'll be able to give him another shout out.
Okay, so then inquiring minds want to know, what are you wearing on the bottom if you're on video?
Oh, those are secrets that I can't tell out of school.
I promise you don't have a mirror behind you. Did you see that one?
I've seen them all, yes. No, I make sure that there's nothing that can see anything. But
We're trying to keep our show clean and not X-rated, but Elisa can never help herself.
Carolyn is going to be a raccoon, right? The next time you go on to your court conference.
Yeah, instead of that whole thing with the cat,
I'll
be a raccoon.
Yes. I know. I'm looking forward to having some of those backgrounds. They're a lot of fun.
So, Neil, our first question for you today is, what is your top advice to anyone planning for a divorce?
Well, as far as from the part that we handle in the tax and estate planning world, while you're going through a divorce, probably the biggest question, the biggest issue that people have relates to filing tax returns. Understanding the difference between filing jointly, filing separately, what the implications of that are. I think most married couples spend their entire married existence just filing jointly because people have told them that's what they're supposed to do. It's probably in most situations going to be the cheapest for them. But once you get to the point of getting ready to or being involved in a matrimonial action, then you have to start thinking about different things, about who's going to be responsible for the tax, what your responsibility is going to be, because, you know, I know you guys do a great amount of work in this area and making sure that your clients are protected from an agreement perspective as far as who's ultimately responsible for the tax liability. But while that works between spouses, the government doesn't really care what that agreement is. So the government will go after, if there's a joint return filed, they'll go after either spouse, whoever's easier to go after, or both of them, and let them, I guess, keep doing what they've been doing so well, and that is fight it out amongst themselves.
I will say that we love that we get, and I guess now the date, when's the filing date?
Well, now it's May 17th for this year.
Correct. So
normally
we
April
get the
15th.
Call on May 15th, right? Oh my God, my husband's presenting a tax return and he wants to file. We love that.
So then at the last minute, we have these tax indemnification agreements where you just, you know, you have people who are going through a divorce and they have income that's off the books and you don't want to have an issue where your client's signing off on a tax return and then we're precluded and kind of stuck with the return. And we do these agreements. So, you know, 2 days before the filing date, we're sending out tons of these and trying to have them executed.
You're fortunate.
Books, Carolyn, what are you
There's no money.
Yeah.
You're fortunate because in the world that we live in now with paper filing having gone away and most of it being in the world of electronic filing, there's so much filing that gets done without anybody even knowing that it's done. So if your client is at least contacting you a couple of days before they can do something, half of the people don't even know that returns are being filed. They're being filed electronically. People are signing things. Nobody's really looking at anything. And, you know, you may get calls after the fact. You know, this was done. Now what do I do? And that becomes even harder.
I had that issue today. Someone reached out to me and her husband filed the return electronically, never showed her the return. She never signed off on anything. We're in the middle of a divorce proceeding. And how do you do that? But the people are still doing as they wish.
And what about before divorce? Any advice you have on like the pre-planning type aspects of that?
I guess depending upon who we're talking about, you know, obviously it's a different kind of discussion if you're talking to the moneyed spouse or the non-moneyed spouse.
Matrimonial terms.
You like that. I throw that out every now and then. I try to pretend that I know a little bit. I guess if you're dealing with either spouse, the best thing to do is to make sure that you have gathered as much information as you possibly can. If you're planning on filing for divorce, if you're not the moneyed spouse, then you've got to get information. You can't spend your life going, oh, I don't know anything. I can't have any information. You know, my spouse took care of everything and I just sat there and signed whatever they put in front of me. You've got to take some responsibility for yourself.
And maybe look at the mail when the mail comes in, take pictures of envelopes so that your attorney can maybe subpoena or gather information through other places.
It's always a good idea to open up mail, especially mail that
not
comes
open,
from.
Well,
if the mail comes to you and it's from the IRS or from New York State Tax Department, it's not a bad idea to open it instead of just putting it in a big pile somewhere.
Oh, we just don't endorse opening mail that's addressed to the other party.
I don't endorse opening
mail that's from the federal government. No.
But the IRS in New York State, if you file a joint return, they will now send notices to both spouses. So there should be a notice that should come to the house if a joint return's been filed, one in the name of each spouse.
Right.
So you may not be opening up the other spouse's mail, but you'll be opening up yours, which will be a copy, an exact copy of what they got.
What about the wills and the life insurance aspects of things?
Well, see, that's more of a before, during, and after. I think it's probably one of the most ignored aspects of getting divorced is having to deal with all of this planning. Unfortunately, when you go through a divorce, I think the last thing you want to do is be told, well, now you have to go see another lawyer to start drafting more documents because you've just been through that for, you know, a period of time. And regardless of how great a relationship you have with your matrimonial attorneys, it's just to see another attorney could, you know, make you want to stab yourself. So, but it's important. It's important to make sure that beneficiary designations are correct on life insurance, on retirement accounts, 401ks, IRAs, whatever you've got. It's essential to make sure that documents are updated, that if you have your spouse named as the guardian or trustee over your children, and there are issues related to that that are going on in the matrimonial action that you certainly don't want to continue to have that.
But you have to be careful of that, right?
You have to be careful because once you commence a divorce proceeding, you are restrained from changing beneficiary designations on life insurance policies. So some people who are going through some divorce planning will be cute, not saying that they were given this advice by experts, and they'll change the beneficiary designation right before you start a divorce, and it just doesn't look good.
You have to change it back.
Even though you're allowed to, because you're not technically under a restraint, if it happened right on the heels of the divorce proceeding, the court's going to make you change it back, and that person is not going to be seen in a good light. However, if it's done 3 years before the commencement, it's going to stay that way because that was always the
designation.
Depends
how long you're pre-planning your divorce. 3 years. Wow.
Listen,
there's other issues. There's issues within wills, and in New York State, for example, you don't have the ability to cut out a spouse from leaving them any assets. They have what's known as a right of election. So if most wills, a lot of wills, I shouldn't say most, but many wills, are what we would call sweetheart wills. I leave everything, you know, one spouse leaves everything to the other spouse and vice versa. When a divorce commences or when you're starting down that road, you don't necessarily have to leave your will that way because, you know, once you get divorced, there are legal provisions as to the fact that if you have a document that names a spouse and they're no longer your spouse, then they may lose their rights under New York State law. But if something, God forbid, were to happen to you while you were going through the divorce, if you were to die, you may not want your assets to go.
And divorces can go on for like 4 years.
Yes, between starting and when they ultimately get finalized. And if somebody dies and they haven't made a change, then their spouse may get 100% of their estate. Whereas if you made the change, left them just the elective share and let the balance of the assets go somewhere else, it's a little bit more protective. So it's really a matter of coordinating all of these different aspects. You know, it's not, divorce is not by itself, where you just do that and you forget about the rest of the world. And I think that's one of the issues that we see, is that people don't want to go through all of this at once, and then they try to fix things later on. It's always much easier.
We're going to have to make it easier for them. And we also wanted to ask you, what is the most frequent call you're getting right now? What's the hot topic in your area?
Well, truthfully, in the tax world right now, the hottest topic is what's going on in Washington and what's about to change. Everybody wants to know, because all we keep hearing is income tax rates are going up, capital gains rates are going up, the estate tax exemptions are going to change, and everybody's running around doing stuff without necessarily knowing exactly what's going to happen. So we don't have any definitive. We have, you know, a lot of vague comments coming from President Biden and from his administration as to things he wants to do, levels of income, this $400,000 level of income that seems to be the level at which he doesn't want to change anybody who's below that. But above that, it's all fair game. But I guess my recommendation to people is pay attention, but don't jump at anything just yet, because you make a lot of changes right now and you can't undo them. So you've got to remain flexible until we have a little bit more of a definitive understanding as to what's going to happen. But pay attention, you know, listen to it. But I would recommend listening to both radio stations or both television stations, not just right. The one that you generally like to listen to, because you need to hear both sides of what's going on. If you only listen to one side, then you're going to think either the world is coming to an end or it's the greatest thing that's ever happened. And it's probably neither of those two things.
And just switching on a personal level, as I said, you have two amazing daughters, ages 17 and 18. How was it going through COVID with your daughters? How were they affected?
Well, living in a house with two teenage daughters who can't go anywhere, do anything, see anybody is certainly not the easiest thing in the world. We were very fortunate. I mean, you know, to look at it a little bit on the positive side, this is family time that we'll never get again. My older daughter is going to be starting at Bentley University up in Boston in September, and it's really the last time we're ever going to have family time like this, other than on those, you know, rare holidays.
And how is her college search process?
As bad as everything was for the 2020 graduates who lost out on prom and lost out on graduation and all of those things, the 2021 graduates had it that much worse, because they spent 6 to 9 months at school doing absolutely nothing, no clubs, no anything that is the normal for what they would do. And I watched my daughter go through it, picking college virtually. You know, you have to do virtual tours and webinars, and, you know, you want to walk on a campus and get a feeling for the campus. Is this the place you want to be? Even when you had the opportunity to walk on the campus, there was nobody there. So it was just a bunch of buildings. So it was an incredibly difficult process. I do have another daughter who's an 11th grader, so I'm going to be going through this process all over again. And I can already see that it's going to be a completely different process, because schools are going to be open in September and people are going to be on campuses and they're going to allow people to walk around.
And on the positive note, now you could go to graduation for high school, right?
You're going to be there. Positive side, yeah. At this point, things have definitely changed. Although my kids are still going to school in a hybrid environment where they go one day, they're home one day, go one day, home one day. But at least some of the things are opening up. So my daughter will have prom. They're not sure exactly where it's going to be just yet, whether it's going to be on school grounds or maybe with all the CDC and Department of Health changes, maybe they'll be able to get into a venue. And we are scheduled right now to have full in-person graduation. My daughters go to Comac High School, so they're having their graduation, at least presently, at Stony Brook University on the big football field. So there's some good stuff that has come out of this. It's been a struggle, but we all made it.
My son is graduating fifth grade, and we're actually doing, they have a dance that they do for the fifth graders, and they're hosting it off premises, but it's going to be in person, and his graduation is going to be in person. So it's nice to see things finally opening up and that we're getting some normalcy.
Fifth grade dance, I mean, I can reflect upon that.
You got to watch out for that fifth grade dance. Although you have a son, so you're okay. If it was my daughter, then I'd be standing there chaperoning.
He doesn't even want to go. I'm like, you going to miss it? Okay, you know.
But so, Neil, we thank you for being here with us. It was really informative. It was really a pleasure.
And it's always great to hear you speak. And, you know, we could probably sit here and talk to you for hours. So thank you for your time. We know it's valuable. And
thank you for the invitation.
Till next time.
Thank you for having me.
Now we're going to take it to Tales from the Bar. So we always find when we are at cocktail parties or networking events or in a group of family, friends, we say what we do and we say we're divorce attorneys. And most of them want to ask us, what's your craziest story you ever heard? What is the top reason somebody wants to get divorced and things of that nature? So we wanted to give everybody who's listening an opportunity. You can visit us at divorceandhappilyeverafter.com, all letters, divorceandhappilyeverafter.com. You could also see us on Instagram and Facebook, where you can submit any questions, comments, any inquiries you have, and we'll address them in future episodes. We also welcome crazy stories that you would like us to discuss and talk about.
And as Elisa said, everyone wants to hear all of the crazy stories. A lot of times clients will sit down for the first time when meeting us and they'll say, I'm glad you're sitting down. You're never going to believe the story I'm about to tell you. And I always say to them, if you can top the stories I've heard and you can tell me something I've never heard before, today is on me.
Yeah. And so, but although we do hear a lot of crazy things because we're truly in people's bedrooms, we don't want to make this an X-rated show, but certainly we've heard it all. One question that we have or what we deal with is, I don't know if you've, Carolyn, have you ever seen The War of the Roses?
I have.
You have. Okay. Normally, Carolyn doesn't watch movies or shows. So I tell her we're going to have to talk about like Netflix. And she looks at me, she says, I don't know that I can handle that, except Good Moms. That was a good
one. That was fun. I never got past where we left off, however. too much to commit to.
Carolyn thought it was scary at night to watch with all the gangs and all that. Anyway, we digress. So some of the crazier things we've heard people do.
And what's very difficult, imagine you're going through a divorce and not only are you stuck living with this person, you are stuck sharing a bedroom. And exclusive occupancy is when one party has sole possession of a house during a divorce. But a lot of times that doesn't happen. So they are together. And we've actually litigated exclusive occupancy over the marital bedroom, exclusive occupancy over the basement of the home where maybe there's a second bedroom.
You go your way, I go my way in a house. So.
And we've litigated the temperature that the house should be kept at.
But going back to the marital bedroom thing, I have a question. Do you think it's more gentlemanlike that the man should leave the marital bedroom or the woman?
Well, I think that is very controversial, so I will plead the fifth on that one. However, a lot of time the man will leave, but sometimes the women leave as well.
Could you imagine a court having to decide that? I remember it happening, and I don't remember what was actually decided. I think possession's 9/10 of the law, so you know, make sure you get to bed first, I guess.
And if they don't want to sleep with you, they'll have to find another location.
Although, most times people, I guess, are still sleeping in the beds. Some people go to the guest room.
A lot of times they separate.
Yeah.
And another, I'm not going to say crazy story, but of people living together that I've seen in many, many, many cases. And oddly, Elisa said she's never had them in her cases. So I don't know what my problem is, but people label food because you're living in the same house. Maybe not everyone's contributing equally, and they will actually label food, put labels on, you know, the containers. This is mine. This is yours, or even label fruit.
And what I said is I know people who label their husbands and their wives certain things, but I have not actually heard about labeling the food in a refrigerator.
It's happened so many times on my cases, and it's just so offensive, especially if you have children, you know, for mom to, for example, be writing that, you know, it's her food. And what does that say about dad? He can't eat.
And what if you label your other spouse as like spoiled milk and like they think it's theirs, but it's spoiled?
They're probably trying to poison him.
And then another thing Carolyn touched upon is the thermostat had to do that. Heat and an air condition costs money. And not to generalize, but sometimes women like it a little bit more warm. Men might like it a little more cold or vice versa.
Not me. I like my bedroom like a meat locker so I can get under as many covers as possible.
That's true. Our Zoom calls in there are a little uncomfortable. So the judge actually said that, you know, the husband wanted a temperature 68 and I think the wife wanted a temperature 74. And I think it was court ordered that they had to keep their thermostat at 70 or 71,
which is
San Diego, which is a nice temperature, I think. But
I would die.
Could you imagine being a matrimonial judge and having to decide these kind of things interim?
I just have to say that to be compatible as a couple, you need to agree on temperatures. Because if someone told me that I had to keep my heat all the time at 70 degrees, they are not the man for me.
So we'll stop there for today. But as Tales of the Bar develop, I'm sure we will have a lot more crazy stories about that. And again, you can certainly send any inquiries to divorceandhappilyeverafter.com. And also, you can visit our firm website, Geffner Kirsch, geffnerkirsch.com, or call us at 516-268-9898.
On the hunt for lost ROI? Chart a course and find hidden profit potential with Acuron Corn Herbicide. It's the only herbicide strong enough to bury competing weeds and help you unearth 5 to 15 more bushels per acre. How's that for hidden riches? Uncover the real value of Acuron at Acuron-herbicide.com. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.